The following podcast contains coarse language and subject matter that is very scary. Listener discretion is advised. What sparks the interest in the world of the bizarre? I never find myself alone in collecting antiques and attending oddity markets, so there are many of us out there. Our fascination in the strange often goes hand in hand with the belief in the paranormal. I collect items that I love based on nostalgia and if they're old and creepy. But how far is too odd? I've always found it fascinating how someone who collects multiples of the same can feel so different. Welcome to the world beyond the veil. This is Geist.
My name is Chris. My professional name is Mysterion. And for the past 20 plus years, I've been working as a professional mentalist. A mentalist is like a magician, only instead of sleight of hand, we use sleight of mind. So I use mental manipulation and psychology to create impossible feats like mind reading and psychokinesis and telepathy, that sort of thing. So I've always been interested in stage magic. I've always been interested in the aesthetics of magic. Back in the turn of the last century, the beautiful stone lithographed print posters of guys like Keller and Houdini and that sort of thing, and Thurston with their little devils sitting on their shoulders. They always fascinated me. Since I was a little kid, I was fascinated with the supernatural. I used to watch TV shows like In Search Of and things like That's Incredible. Mentalists that were on TV were guys like The Amazing Kreskin. And there was a lot of new age content in television in the 70s. So it was natural for me to want to explore the unknown. And it just sort of stuck with me. And I needed to know how it was being achieved in such a way that it fooled intelligent people. And so I always had an interest in that sort of thing. And I took the time to study it and started performing it as a hobby. And then in about 20 years ago, I was performing at a venue with some friends, and I was the in-between act. And one of the local newspapers came to the show and saw my act and said, "This is incredible. We want to do a little piece on you." And so overnight, I kind of became this known person in Toronto. And I figured, oh, you know, it's going to fade out and fizzle away. And it didn't. It kept growing. And I appeared on television shows that were of the time and morning shows. And I started booking myself at little venues and then getting corporate work. And I realized, man, I could entertain and make a good living. Why not? And then, of course, when I started to bring in a little bit of money, I started to use that funding to purchase oddities and unusual items, which at the time, not many people were doing. As a boy, I used to visit Niagara Falls and go to the Ripley's Museum and those oddities museums that they used to have there. And I saw the shrunken heads and the grave bell and the ancestral skulls and all those things that they had on display. And I always wanted them. I always wanted to bring them home.
When you walk into Mysterion's apartment, it's a collector's heaven. Shelves of rare and collectible toys from every era, framed autographs of celebrities like Elvis Presley, Vincent Price, and the Ramones. And then you enter his cabinet of curiosities, where he displays all of his wild oddities.
I decided I was going to start collecting oddities. And the first relic that I bought was a two-headed duck, little oddity, Siamese ducklings. I got a human skull with no mandible. It was just a medical skull, average everyday human skull, but it started an obsession and I haven't stopped. I have about 200 pieces right now, everything from double-faced calves to plague victims to a real Atacama mummy from Peru, which is reportedly a little gray alien. I've had medical specialists look at it and they can't figure out what it is. It has adult hardened bones, tiny teeth, and it's something else. It's, and no pun intended, it's out of this world.
He had corpses' teeth, bloodletting tools, articles on the strange and unusual from across the globe. It was truly remarkable.
I used to have a doll called the Leanne doll. And the Leanne doll, if you held it, you felt really, really sick. Everyone I brought it to would feel nauseous, and the doll carried some sort of energy. I brought that doll to Black Creek Pioneer Village for a show they'd hired me for. And a little boy stole it, took it away. And I don't know where it ever went. So I have a big appreciation for the supernatural because it's just that. It's beyond our realm of understanding. I don't really have a manifesto or a reason. I just love to collect and show it off. And whatever you can get from it is what you get from it.
So how did you get into performing and your haunted relics?
See?
Who did that?
I don't know.
Oh, did something fall in?
Yeah, someone moved something.
Did sometimes the toys
things move? No, things will just move. You saw the cat.
I did.
Yeah.
So what happened is during our interview, two toys toppled off of the shelf and it looked like they had been pushed. Now, I know that's not really unusual, and things can fall off of a shelf at any point, but these are rare collectible items that he has displayed securely on these shelves. The room that these toys are displayed in is not the room that we were sitting in, so it was vacant at the time that it happened. A lot of strange things happened during Geist interviews, so I wouldn't have even made mention of it, but Mysterion did warn me that when you start talking about his relics and haunted items, strange things start happening in his apartment. When I entered Mysterion's apartment, I saw a little white cat run into the kitchen. After getting settled in, I mentioned the cat to Mysterion, and he told me his name was Jack, and that he passed away in 2022.
The difference between oddities and haunted items is an oddity is something that defies nature. So it would be Siamese babies, Cyclops pig, albino animals that I have that are mounted. A haunted item is something that is an item that holds a residual energy or has an attachment to it. And that could be really anything. It could be a piece of jewelry. It could be a piece of memento mori. It could be a doll. Very popular thing to have is a haunted doll. Some people in the paranormal community believe that antiques can hold energy and photographs even, and different items that purportedly carry a history. Haunted item that I own is recognized as Canada's most haunted doll, and it's a doll called Walt. He came into my possession about 5.5 years ago from the descendants of the original owners, and his backstory is really creepy. Walt is the name I call the doll because that was the name of the boy who originally owned him. And he was owned by a boy named Walter Tomlinson from Amenia, New York. Walter Tomlinson was 7 years old in the early 30s, and he had violent outbursts that today you could treat. He was cared for, but really in just a very archaic way. They kind of kept him just sequestered in the house. He would attack people all the time. He would tear things up, rip them up, scream and yell. And he didn't have many toys because he would break the toys, except for one, which was this doll. He treated the doll as a companion. He spoke to the doll as a person. After attacking his housekeeper, the doll was taken from him, and he threw a fit, got some matches, and set his bedsheets on fire. The house went up. Fortunately, no one died, and the boy was then put into a home, which in those days was pretty much a life sentence. Ever since then, people who have had the doll have claimed that there is energy around the doll, that the doll moves on its own. Well, the next generation of people who took the doll, they lived in a small house in Pennsylvania State. They had a fire that burnt the house to the ground. Doll survived, moved on to the next generation of people. They had the doll, they had a fire. One of the animals in the house died from that fire. The next generation didn't have any instances, and then I got the doll. So far, so good. There hasn't been any fires in my house. There have been fires in public where I've taken the doll out. I had 60 witnesses watch a fireball literally manifest in front of everybody. We have it on tape, but it's up on YouTube. Everyone screaming and losing their mind, and it even startled me where I had to stop the presentation that people had paid to see because I was more concerned about somebody getting injured. But this fireball literally manifested out of nowhere, and nothing was hurt. Nobody was hurt. Nothing was destroyed. But there was evidence of a fire. The only other thing that I can say that happened in the house that was related to a fire was I don't smoke or anything like that. But I had a friend that came by and he asked if he could smoke. And I said, yeah, sure, you can smoke your whatever. And so he did. And there was an ashtray sitting to my right, and he put the roach in the ashtray. And then about an hour later, the couch that I'm sitting on right now was smoldering. And the roach had fallen out somehow from inside the well of the ashtray and was landed on the couch and started burning it. And I put it out, thankfully. As I was putting it out, the doll slid out of its chair. So I was kind of like, you motherfucker. Like, you were trying to burn my house down. I didn't do anything. Maybe he had a problem with the joint being smoked. I don't know. But a lot of people have come here, and a lot of paranormal investigators have looked at the doll. There was a crew from Hulu on the show Repossessed. We had the doll looked at by them. They didn't even know the backstory of the doll. And I had not given any preamble to producers on the show or anything at all. And they started telling me things about the doll that I knew. They said that the boy's name was Walter. And then they said that he was involved with a fire. There were candles that were lit, and there was no breeze in the space we were in. And the candles were moving whenever we would say certain words. It was pretty surreal. It was pretty cool.
But Walt has some rules.
Walt's good with people in small doses. If I start bringing him out like a curiosity and kind of, lack of a better word, forcing him to be social with people, the energy drops and people feel it. He might even fall out of your hand. He had a rip in the back of his jacket, and it was held in with a safety pin. And people have had Walt and then gotten stuck with the pin. So a little stab just to sort of say, hey, leave me alone. I took him to Estes Park, Colorado, to the Stanley Hotel, and he definitely didn't like it there. He was at the house that I was staying at, and I couldn't bring him into the hotel. His energy was way off the charts. I was running a like a little iovulus, and it was like, bring me home now, fire. So I just left him where I was staying and brought him home, and everything was okay. I've taken him to some places. I took him to New York, took him to Chicago, I took him to Nashville, and I took him to like Ottawa and places around Toronto. But generally though, he's now kind of going to be confined here.
So the fate of Walt the doll was that of its original owner, a series of outbursts that led to confinement.
There's a few things I have to touch on that I'm not sure about with the doll, is if he's haunted by the boy or if it's its own entity that haunts the doll. The boy had these outbursts. He had these issues that caused him to be erratic in his behavior. From what I understand, children, inanimate objects that look innocent, are easy vessels for beings to sort of take over and trick people into believing are harmless. I don't have any proof of that, but it's something that I've kind of thought about. And, you know, it's an interesting path to take.
As Mysterion's collection grew, he didn't realize he would acquire an item that went beyond oddity.
I was offered an item about 6 years ago that I purchased. At first, when I bought this, I thought really nothing of it more than, wow, this is pretty amazing, but it's not going to cause me any issues. I didn't even think of it causing me any issues. But then it came into my home and, well, let's just say it was issues. The item was a voodoo altar that was made from the skull of a murdered man. And I mean, you're just asking for a horror story. You know, I'm going to just bring it in my house. It's home decor. To me, it was just another item because I have a house full of human skulls. So it didn't really faze me. You know, it was more of this sideshow vibe, like, come on over and see my cool new toy, right? And it was quite tall. It was about 6 feet tall, big giant cross, had the head on top. And then you would offer it things like cigars or tobacco and wine and money, and it would go to the voodoo god of Baron Samedi. With all respect, I did give it little offerings, but I wasn't religious about it, no pun intended. And I kind of left it at times.
But when he forgot to leave his offerings,
and things got really thick and dark and creepy, and there was just this ambiance of fear and an ambiance of misery, depression.
But then this altar took on a life of its own.
It became something that I would see from the corner of my eye and be like, what's going on over there? Or what is that doing? Or what is that? Or I'd notice something about it that looked different. I don't remember ever doing that. Or where did the tobacco go? I never put those coins on there. Or little things that just seemed a little bit different and odd. And no one lived here at the time. I lived alone. And so it became an elephant in the room for me, where I would kind of not be afraid of it, but I was aware of it. And in a different way than I'm aware of other things that are in the house. There was a little bit of a nervousness that I had if I caught it and I noticed it. It was almost as if, too, it was trying to get my attention. It was doing a little bit of damage. I'm a very happy person who likes things that I enjoy. It became deeply depressive to be in this house. And I even got thinking some pretty dark things. Eventually, I was offered some money for the altar. I ended up selling it. I still have access to look at it. I still have access to visit the altar. The day that it left my home, I kind of was reorganizing the living room a little bit just because it was gone and there was this open space available now. That night I went to bed and I woke up to turn to my girlfriend. And unknown to me, she was looking into this room and saw like an 8 foot tall shadow figure looking for something. I didn't see it, but she describes it as an 8 foot tall shadow of a human man, dark energy. And then that figure never came back again. Needless to say, the voodoo altar is probably one of the strangest items that I've acquired.
Mysterion's interest in the strange and unusual was accompanied by a strong interest in the paranormal.
My interest in the supernatural goes right back to as early as I can remember. When I was a boy, I lived in a house that was quite active, and I wasn't the only one who saw the spirit. There was a lot of family members that did. I was raised by my grandparents, and their siblings were living at the house, and my grandmother's sister. My mother lived in her own little unit just around the corner, and I would kind of be visit. I was raised by everybody, but I lived with them. And they moved when I was 8 into a small house in North York. The minute I went in the house, I didn't like it. I didn't want to be there. I felt like the house was too big. Or there was something there that was hiding. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. One of my earliest memories of feeling uneasy in the house was I would get up early on Saturday morning to watch Saturday morning cartoons. I would be up alone. Everyone else would be sleeping. And I remember the first thing was seeing my aunt walk by the living room door. And then when I went out to look for her, she wasn't there and she was in her bed sleeping. And I kind of thought, that's weird.
And then other things would start happening during his Saturday morning cartoon ritual.
I always put things back in their place. I've always been that way. And I remember pouring cereal, putting them away, going back into the living room, which was like 10 feet away from the kitchen door. And then when I would go back in at commercial, the milk would be out on the table, or the cupboard would be open, the drawer would be open, or milk would be spilt. Little things that I know I couldn't have overlooked, but I didn't think much of it. It was only when it started happening more frequently and other people started mentioning things that were happening in the house. My grandmother and her son-in-law were at the house one day. She was in the kitchen cleaning up, and I guess she had asked him if he wanted something to eat earlier in the hour. Because he came into the kitchen and said to her, "I'll have that sandwich if you want to make it for me now." And she said, "Oh, I'm happy to make it for you, but you should have told me a few minutes ago before I started cleaning up when you were in here." And he was like, "I wasn't in here at all." She was like, "What are you talking about? You've been standing there for like 15 minutes just watching me do dishes." And he was like, "No, I was in the other room watching TV. I never went in the kitchen. Nobody else was home." So he went through the house with like a hockey stick, you know, looking for an intruder. Like, I remember her son, Tom, and then his brother, Brian, my uncles, you know, so many times there's a man outside or there's a man in the hallway, and then right through the goddamn house with a hockey stick. And the going through the house with the hockey stick happened many times.
But there wasn't only a male presence in the house.
The big thing that happened with me was I slept in the basement with Tom. You would go out of the room that I stayed in. It was like not a bedroom, it was more like a basement rec room, but it was our bedroom. And then you would go out of there, and there was this tiny, tiny room. And then there was a little bathroom and a laundry room. The whole square footage of this basement was small. And I remember one day waking up. As my eyes adjusted, I could see standing in front of me was a woman looking at me. You know, she wasn't actively doing anything. She was just standing there looking at me. And I didn't feel freaked out, but I felt a little bit uneasy. And I reached over and turned on the television that was sitting on the bed stand next to me, a little portable TV that we had. And as the light of the TV started to sort of enter the room, I remember her vividly disappearing.
And he wasn't the only one to witness this mysterious lady.
My grandmother got sick, and she passed away in July of 86. One of my cousins came to visit, and they were sleeping in my grandmother's room, and her husband, my grandfather, came downstairs to sleep in the basement on the pullout couch. One morning we were sitting around, and she said, "Yeah, I woke up in the middle of the night and there was just some random woman looking around the room. I don't know who it was." And I was like, "Okay, how did she look?" And she described the spirit that I saw. It was no more than a plainly dressed woman with a bun in her hair and, you know, just kind of calmly meandering around the space.
This apparition attempted to reach out to him in another way.
I would go out to the backyard and, you know, play with my G.I. Joes or whatever, or just sit and read comic books. And I had this just unknown inclination to walk into the middle of the backyard and just dig a little hole. And I dug a hole maybe a foot and a half down, and I found an old lead soldier, a toy soldier. I didn't want it because it was as if the house was giving me something. So I brought it down into the basement and I put it in one of those crusher vices that you would have mounted on the side of a table. And I crushed it flat and I threw the lead away.
After years of encounters with this woman, Mysterion never felt that she was a threat. He found it almost comforting. But then his family's time in that house came to an end, but not without a final goodbye.
We moved out, and when my family moved out, we only literally, the backyard of this house touched the backyard of the building we moved into, like by like 10 feet. So you could jump over the fence and kind of like walk over to the house. We were moving. They were literally just passing stuff over a fence. And when Tom went back to get a few last things, he said that he put his key in the door and it wouldn't turn. It was almost as if someone was holding it. So we went around to the back door, and when he turned it, he opened the door, he heard someone run down the steps, and there was no one there.
Unbeknownst to him, his connection to that house never broke, and it became clear years after he left.
18 years later, I now have a half-sister on my father's side. My father wasn't in that part of the family. He was around when I was a kid, but he would not ever remember the address where my grandparents... It just wouldn't be the way it was. We were driving my sister somewhere, and we pulled onto the street where the house was, and I said to my father, "Slow down." And I said, "You see that house? That's where I grew up." And my sister said, "That's my friend Tanner's house." And I went, "What do you mean?" She goes, "My friend from school lives there." I said, "Come on." She goes, "Yeah, my friend lives there." I left it at that. 4 or 5 months later, I'm doing I'm entertaining at a bar mitzvah, and I'm just walking around entertaining the kids while they're, you know, mingling about. And this kid comes up to me and he goes, "Are you Kaylee's brother?" And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, I live in your old house." And I go, "Oh, you know, you don't say." And he goes, "Can I ask you something?" And I go, "What? Is the house haunted?" And I went, "Why would you think that?" And he goes, "Well, my brother and I would wake up and see a woman looking at us." So he said that he was down in the basement once and they were watching TV. And when they flicked off the television and turned around, she was standing looking at them. And I just thought, there's no way to describe her. And he described the woman. And I was like goose pimples, freaked out. And I was like, I got to find out what happened in this house.
Then, a few years later,
I had surgery, minor surgery. And my girlfriend and myself went to deal with something to do with like post at the doctor or whatever. And I took her to this bagel joint that was just around the corner from the house because it was near there. And I said to her, "Hey, after we have lunch, do you want to walk by the old place?" We're going down the street, and there was a guy doing work on his car. And I struck up a conversation with him, told him I lived there. The neighbor came out, remembered me, because the neighbor's generational. He lived there. He knew who I was from TV. He invited me in. And I thought, I mean, I don't know if I want to go back into the haunted house. Like, I'm going in. So we went in, went down to the basement. You wouldn't even recognize it. The whole place had been completely redone. I went into the area space where my room would have been, and it was like the smallest room. It felt so small. We had a coffee. There was a bunch of people living there, Filipino family. It was like his mom's sister. It's kind of like my situation. And I said, "So where's the ghost?" And he said, "Oh, there's no ghost here." And I went, "No, there's a ghost. You know there's a ghost." And he looked at me and he just went, "There's no ghost here." And he went, "Well, the ghost is gone. When I did the renos, the ghost went away." I said, "The ghost isn't going to go away when you did the renos." I left it at that. We went out. We're standing in the driveway. I called an Uber And I turn to the guy next door. I say goodbye to him. I turn to the guy that lives there. I say goodbye to him. As the car pulls up, I look up at the house and I say, thank you for letting me back into your house. I hope you remembered me.
And she remembered.
And I was wearing a Japanese tour jacket, and it's silk, and I felt someone grab my arm, gave it a little nudge, and then let go, and I was just stunned. Apparently, I went white. Liz, the guy, the neighbor, all looked down at me. You saw the jacket move, and I was just stunned. And I did a little bit of homework, and I found out a little bit of history on the house. In the early 70s, there was a Hasidic Jewish family that lived there who had a 22-year-old daughter who died, and she died in the house. So if I think about that, how she looked, if I think about the role she was playing, she was watching over kids. She wasn't doing anything bad. She was just watching over the children, probably like she did in life with her younger siblings. She died in the house and was stuck in the house. I really want to get a death date and find out where she's buried, because I have to go there to put flowers. I think that in the oddity community, and I have to be kind of open with this, people want things to be haunted. And so they're looking at items that are not haunted and saying, okay, this is obviously haunted because it's old, or this is obviously haunted because it looks distressed, or it's scary, or whatever number of reasons. And I think we think of things very linearly, and as a science based society opposed to a religious-based society, which was the last 2,000 years, I think we can come up with some interesting parallels between what we know as factual that actually align with biblical stories and religious context and various things like that. But I know that if it happens enough and people are all experiencing it, especially when there's instances like the house that I grew up in, nobody told anybody else anything about that house. So when I see that kind of a pattern, that might be one of the instances where you go, yeah, ghosts could be real. The existence of an afterlife is just as scary as not having an afterlife.
A very special thanks to Mr. Ian for sharing his stories and experiences. We love hearing from our fans. When you have a sec, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as we continue to bring you the strangest of stories. If you have a story you've been hiding, submit it to us at hello.geist.podcast@gmail.com. Geist is written and directed by Daniel Matar. Original music and FX by Beau Jensen. Geist is mixed by Adam Esker. Geist logo is by Jake Carruthers. You can follow us on Instagram at Geist_podcast and on TikTok at Geist Podcast. Again, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, sleep tight.